welcome to ID the Future. I'm Casey Luskin, broadcasting with Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture from here in Seattle. And again, we have on the show with us today Dr. Wolf Eckhard Lonig, a geneticist who retired not long ago from the Max Planck Institute for Plant Breeding Research in Germany. Again, we've had Dr. Lonig on the podcast a number of times over the past year, talking about various topics like the origin of dogs or the long-necked giraffe or the origin of carnivorous plants. And in a recent podcast, we had him on talking about the law of recurrent variation. And we're going to pick up where we left off last time around with Dr. Lonig to continue talking about the law of recurrent variation and the problems that it poses for Darwinian evolution. So, Dr. Lonig, thanks again for coming on the show with us.
Very nice, Casey, to continue that interview.
So, Dr. Lonig, is this sort of mutation breeding research still being funded in Europe or elsewhere, to your knowledge?
I do not know whether it's funded elsewhere, but I know about the situation here in Germany. The German Research Foundation, the DFG, Deutsche Forschungsgemeinschaft, which is probably Germany's most important research funding organization, and even the largest such organization in Europe, does not fund any mutation breeding programs anymore, nor does any of the European research funding organizations I know of. There may still be some things in the so-called third world, but it was exported during those times of euphoria. It was exported into the third world, and I do not know whether there are still some mutation breeding programs in the so-called third world. But in the Western countries, it has practically or virtually totally stopped because the results were so meager that it was not worthwhile to continue it. And I've also spoken with the private German plant breeders, and one of the leading figures told me it is not worthwhile to continue it, and they stopped it also.
Dr. Lonig, what is the present situation of mutation breeding? Does it still exist for animal breeding or plant breeding?
In animal breeding, it has stopped totally, and it has absolutely no future. In plant breeding, it has almost everywhere stopped worldwide because of the meager results which were produced.
To what extent is the failure of mutation breeding research relevant for neo-Darwinism?
You remember that I mentioned in the beginning that Muller thought that these mutations are the basis for the evolution of all plant and animals. And he especially thought of invisible or almost invisible mutation. There's an enormous gulf between the results of mutation breeding, the gene mutations relevant for the synthetic theory of evolution or neo-Darwinism. It is still thought that the accidental mutations are the most important basis for evolution worldwide. And now the expectations which were derived from mutation breeding, now after they have collapsed almost totally, one may ask, can this not have some repercussions for the synthetic theory? Interestingly, the gulf has widened. Mutation breeding has largely stopped worldwide, but belief and faith in accidental mutations as a basis for all life forms is still flourishing. This is a very interesting situation.
I definitely agree with you, Dr. Lonig, that there's a major disconnect there between the empirical results and the beliefs people hold about neo-Darwinism. Now, what about mutation experiments on Drosophila and other similar organisms?
As you know, there have been mutagenesis experiments with Drosophila for about 90 years now. And also before that, mutants have been investigated, for example, by Morgan and others. And one can say that in spite of all these investigations, never has there been a new species which could survive in the wild being induced by mutations. This is an inference which has not only been made, as often said by neo-Darwinians, by fundamentalist Christians or other religious people, but this has also been found by a leading biologist, even atheists. May I quote, for example, Christian Schwabe. He is a professor of medical genetics at the University of South Carolina. And before that, he was professor of biochemistry at Harvard Medical School. And he, I know him personally, that he said he is an atheist. And he said in a publication, quote, "To invoke strings of beneficial mutations that suffice to reshape one animal into the shape of another is not merely unreasonable, it is not science." And you also know, of course, Lynn Margulis, and she says about the question of evolutionary novelties by chance mutations, quote, "I have seen no evidence whatsoever that these changes can occur through the accumulation of gradual mutations." And one of the great biologists, the French biologist, Pierre-Paul Gerset, said mutations are merely hereditary fluctuations around a medium position. No matter how numerous they may be, mutations do not produce any kind of evolution. It goes even further than I do. I think there are many good reasons to say that mutations are involved in microevolution. And of course, Richard B. Goldschmidt, he said that it must be kept in mind, quotation, that neither the neo-Darwinians ever built up as much as the semblance of a new species by a recombination of micromutations. In such well-studied organisms as Drosophila, in which numerous visible and incidentally small invisible mutations have been recombined, never has even the first step into the direction of a new species been accomplished, not to mention higher categories. Well, there are many others. My old boss at the University of Bonn, he is in full agreement with Christian Schwabe and Lynn Margulis, saying that neither by many gene mutations nor by induction of singular progressive mutations have new species been experimentally produced. And of course, not only the pea has been treated, but also many other crop plants, maize, of course. Then, of course, one of the most important crop plants, barley, was treated for dozens of years in many barley breeding stations around the world. And I want to just quote, in the breeding station in Svalöv in Sweden, "In decades of experiments, explain the phenomenon of recurrently appearing mutants. In that station alone, more than 100,000 mutants have been identified, including many lethal mutants. And for plant breeding research, about 9,000 barley mutants have been isolated." And interestingly, when we come to that law of recurrent variation, she has described these results in her papers. And just not to enumerate all these different mutants, but just to give you three examples, Erectoides, dense spike mutants, have appeared independently of each other 205 times. Etzeriferum, Wechsler's mutants, have appeared independently 1,527 times. Brevi aristatum, short horn mutants, 100 times independently of each other appeared in these experiments. So it was a regular appearance of very similar or virtually identical phenotypes due to mutants in the same or different genes. In barley, of 9 types of mutants, which I have given in one of the papers, they have appeared altogether independently of each other 2,422 times. And the same things have been found in rice, Rutza sativa, in corn, Zia maize, in soybean, Glutinemax, and many others. Interestingly, in Lundquist has given a summary of the types of mutants in barley. And interestingly, exactly 93 different types of mutants had been induced in these enormous amount of barley mutant experiments. And one can say worldwide millions, perhaps even billions of barley mutants were induced. And of these, only 25 were found acceptable for the list of commercial barley cultivars, and 33 were added due to recombination. However, since the average cultivation time of commercial barley line is only about 10 years, most of these lines will not be cultivated anymore. So, interestingly, mutants, this is a quotation of one of the leading authors, mutants for just about every recognizable trait exists in Bali. And this meager results show, again, Puhlmann's comment, that one can only conclude that the results from mutation breeding in varietal development of the major field crops have been rather meager in relation to the efforts expended. Well, my own studies, during the last 40 years, I've worked with Antirrhinum, Pisum, Mesopotis, and Physalis, are in full accord, as altogether about 2.5 million plants, which I have investigated, and there are many examples of the regular appearance of certain mutants. So this is something which anybody with an open mind can really check and can found to be true when studying the original literature, of course, on the basis of an open mind.
Okay, Dr. Lonig, well, this is very fascinating. I do think that we are running out of time, so we're going to have to pick this up in a third podcast where we'll finish our conversation with Dr. Wolf Eckhard Lonig about the law of recurrent variation. I'm Casey Luskin with ID the Future. Thanks for listening.
This program was recorded by Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture. ID the Future is copyright Discovery Institute 2013. For more information, visit www.intelligentdesign.org or www.idthefuture.com.